participating. You also, I was saying, you will also have an opportunity. So we're going back on the record October 27, 2022, here in Kitsap County, related to the Apple Tree Point Highlands Phase 3 SSDP proposal. Anna Reeves, the hearing examiner, and when we stopped, we had sort of heard a lot of information from both county staff and the applicant's team. And I determined it'd probably be good to see if there were folks that wanted to testify from the public at the moment, and then we can go back. In terms of process, it's not as strict as a council meeting to the extent that you're not going to see a big flashing red light if you go beyond 3 minutes. That said, I try to limit it to about that amount of time. And if you have submitted written comments, I have them and I've reviewed them. But those that want to testify, I'll swear you in. And so the first person on the list.
We have a Sarah Frey or Fry. She's on her way up.
Okay. And also, if you have questions, it's not really going to be a question and answer that's possible. But what you can do is say, you know, I have a question about this. I hope someone will be able to answer it. And then when we get through the public testimony, I'm taking notes. The applicant's team should be taking notes in the county. And then we'll try to get answers at that point for those that are interested. So with that, I'll get you sworn in. Thank you for being here. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth in the testimony you give here today?
I do.
And if you could just state and spell your name for the audio.
Sarah Frey, S-A-R-A-F-R-E-Y.
Great. Thank you for being here. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I'm a resident down on Apple Tree Point. And so my comments and questions today are based on the assumption that that this pipe will be coming down the road and the concerns about protection for the neighborhood, the neighbors that lie within there. I'm only speaking on my behalf, not on behalf of the neighborhood. As people have talked about the characteristics of the road, it is a steep and winding road. It's a private road that's paid for and maintained by the residents that live at the bottom of the hill where this pipe is going to have its outlet. It's the only ingress and egress to our homes, unless we were to try to approach by water, which would be difficult at best. It's extremely prone to slides. It's in a critical area that's been designated as a slide area. And so having the pipe come down the road, there's not only concern that that would cause destabilization to the slope, but concerns about what happens if there's a breach in that pipe, either as a result of a slide or as a result of the pipe failing in some way, or there, you know, Mr. Heacock spoke to sediment that might end up in the pipe and something caused a disruption. This could potentially take out the road. You know, and we've had this previously happen with pipes or just from slides. And this would easily be in the hundreds of thousands, if not more, to repair. My understanding from what's in the documents and what's just been talked about is that there's maintenance of the stormwater system at the top, but that the county will not be responsible where it enters the private property going down the road. You know, I saw a mention in there about having the HOA be required to do maintenance, but my concern is having insurance or some other mechanism that if there is a significant disruption, that we have the ability to have that repaired in a timely manner and not be wound up in a legal, you know, a lengthy court battle for years to try to recoup what could be substantial costs. Who is going to oversee that the maintenance is being done? I heard the comment about the sediment again. Then the part that it comes down into the wetlands, there is a stormwater outlet flow valve that when the tide is high and when there's water coming down the hill, and that's located within the HOA, that allows the water to move out when the tide goes back out. I don't see in the record where it talks about how, and again, this tidal gate is the responsibility of the homes down there to maintain. And I don't see anything addressing the additional stress or burden that is going to be experienced by that tidal gate or the neighborhood based on the additional water that's going to come into the wetlands. It is concerning that, you know, we've been talking about 10-year storms, but honestly, we've been having yearly storms that are significant. Just this last year, we had a huge storm surge, which flooded the neighborhood. So there is concern about the additional burden. I thought I understood from the engineer that it would then go out onto the beach, but there's no doubt it is going to add additional water to that wetland area. And then finally, where this comes out onto the shoreline, which is a few houses to the north of me, I have had myself in the last 5 years significant loss of land related to storms. And that's why I made the comment that it seems to be yearly. And I'm having a difficult time protecting my home. Who is going to be responsible after each storm to come down and inspect? I don't know if this is just self-maintaining. I've seen where huge swaths of land have now been taken out along with logs. So I can only imagine that there would be some damage. How is that going to be maintained and so that there's no interruption in this ability for the water to outflow, which again could have an impact if it's getting trapped in the wetlands or impacting our road. So those are my concerns, and thank you for your time.
Sure.
Just to make sure, ask me questions, but
I was going to say, just to make sure I kind of have it all. So the road being a private road, there's concern about, you know, what would happen if there was an issue with the pipe and who's responsible. Will there be any kind of insurance requirement related to it? And then once we get further down, you've got the two areas, you've got the wetland, and there's a concern about that tidal gate that you discussed. And then on the beach side, the concern is shore erosion and also maintenance. Who will ensure that after storms or other events that this is working properly? Is that fairly accurate?
Correct. Yeah. You know, in regards to the tidal gate, there's a document on file that the county will be responsible for inspections and and we're aware that that's not been happening. And so there is concern, and we've had an ongoing talking relationship with the developer and his engineers and people, you know, talking about these questions. And we understand that there is some responsibility on the HOA. You know, my concern is that it's adequate and that it's ongoing and includes damage to the road.
Okay, great. Thank you for your thoughts.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I know we had at least one other person there that had signed up.
And we've got Catherine Tarbill.
Okay. I think I had a couple comments in the record from Catherine Tarbill as well, but I'll swear you in.
Do you swear? Okay. Can you hear me?
I can. Do you swear? Okay. Do you swear affirm to tell the truth in the testimony you give here today?
I do.
And if you could just state and then spell your name.
Catherine Tarbill, C-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E, T-A-R-B-I-O-L.
Great, thank you for being here.
Okay, thank you. First of all, I want to say that I'm here to represent myself as a property owner, even though my husband is part of the owner of the property that's being developed in the Highlands. So Okay. This is just me as a property owner. We own three parcels and we happen to be neighbors with Sarah Frey. And I reiterate everything that Sarah said. I don't need to go over what she said because my concerns are exactly the same thing. One of the things that really concerns me is this 10-year emergency event where there would be outflow from the tank that's collecting the water. As Sarah said, this is a yearly thing that we're going through whenever we have a heavy rainfall. When you add a king tide and a full moon and a heavy rainfall and the saltwater breaches we're having, our properties are getting flooded not only once a year, but several times a year. My concern is, I'm not sure if this is correct, the diverter of some sort going in behind the Fortune Schroeder property that is going to convey that water into the wetlands, which goes behind one of our homes. And if that emergency is happening in the wetlands, because the only reason I can think that you would have a release would be if there was too much water. That same event is happening down in the lowlands. So if there's too much water in the lowlands and our tides bring the water up to the surface of the water, and then you're having all that water from the tank coming down, we're going to be impacted doubly, is what we're going to be impacted by. So that really concerns me. Another thing that concerns me is some of the things that the newest research has shown, where chemicals like from tires are getting into Puget Sound and affecting the aquatic life. Will there be filters in that tank to address those areas as far as taking those kinds of chemicals out before they are released into Puget Sound? And lastly, as Sarah did say, my concern about the maintenance of this. In order for them to maintain this pipeline, they have to be using the road, which is a private road. And in your report that the county did have, there is a section, specifically number 40, where it says that the private roads will be maintained. Not just the system, but the road itself will be maintained. And parcel A, parcel B, and parcel C of this large development that my husband's family has, and I have been a part of for 50 years, and I've seen the history. I don't necessarily have to have the expertise of all of these people that know the calculations, but I know what's been going on for 50 years. Those parcels are all supposed to be responsible for maintaining that road, and that is not happening as it is now. According to the conditions, that is something that is supposed to happen, and I just want to make sure that that is followed.
Sorry, just to clarify that last point, Ms. Tartle, you're saying there are three parcels on the bluff, A, B, and C. There's some kind of road maintenance agreement already in place where
you got it. We all have there are three entities. Parcel C, if I'm correct, is phase one, phase two, and phase three. That is parcel C. Parcel B is what the family plot land was. And I think parcel B is the where Sarah lives in the estates. And every one of those sections is responsible for following the road maintenance agreement, which is attached to the titles of every home and every parcel that's there. That road is supposed to be maintained by all people.
Even the upland is what you're...
Even the uplands. And that is not even happening today. And phase one is already complete.
And further to clarify, even the uplands, with your understanding, even prior to any kind of stormwater infrastructure being installed.
Is that correct? Right? Okay. It's under the 1994 road maintenance agreement. It is it is recorded in the county, and it is recorded on all parcels of land, including the undeveloped land.
Okay. I think I understand. Thank you. And I do note, I think you had a comment that came in, I think on the 25th, which I do have in the record. And I think you may have had a few earlier emails as well. So I have all that in the record, and I've furiously taken notes on what we just discussed just now. So I think, some answers in a little bit. Thank you. Any other folks there in the room?
Anybody else that wants to speak? No takers.
Okay. And then in terms of our virtual folks, again, I think we have enabled the raise hand feature. So if you hit the raise hand, if you're interested in participating. Sorry, I'm trying to minimize the chat feature. Looks like no takers. Is that your understanding as well?
I'm not seeing any raised hands. We did have a comment earlier. I can check to see if Mr. Novak wants to speak.
Oh, in the chat, which we will ultimately can make part of the record.
All right.
Okay.
It does not look like he wishes to provide any testimony, so.
Okay, so then with that, I think at this point, if I could have Attorney Lau come back, I feel like yo-yo here. I'm making her get up, get down, but.
Yes. Hi there.
Hi. So with that, I will sort of let you direct traffic in terms of what you think would make the most sense in terms of your team. But I would suggest if there's anyone that might be able to answer some of those questions that just came up to start, that would be great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Why don't actually I first, well, because I'm up here, why don't I address a few items that are probably a little bit more appropriate in my camp, and then I'll ask Mark to return to the podium to address more of the physical and engineering maintenance-based concerns. So I'm going to take this, I think, in reverse order, though, just because I'm up here and it's a little more convenient. So with respect to, I just want to speak to the private road maintenance issue. So there is a applicant absolutely acknowledges there is an existing road maintenance agreement that does include, as was, I agree with the characterization, this parcel C, which covers the full plat area, the earlier phases and the current phase at issue that we're discussing today. I don't want to call it a dispute, but there's certainly an ongoing discussion about two issues, really. Who gets to use that road and who has obligations to maintain it? A lot of this, in some extent, I think, is going to be worked out very easily between the parties. And I say that because a big chunk of the road will become a public road in conjunction with this plat. And so the issue of maintenance is going to get turned over to the county up to a certain point. There have been discussions between the parties about beyond that point where the road is private, whether or not it's appropriate, because that'll be beyond, that'll be further down from where the houses are located. There has been discussions about whether it's appropriate for the lot owners to continue to have access towards the water. My client's been very open to coming up with a reasonable solution because, yeah, it doesn't make sense for the lot owners to continue to have access waterward. On the other hand, because there is going to be a need for the homeowners association to provide ongoing maintenance to the stormwater facilities, there will need to be some limited access to ensure that occurs. And so to that extent, a reasonable appropriation of maintenance for that private road to accommodate that more limited use, certainly the applicant is very open to continue discussions with the community on that regard. So I do truly think that this is something that's doesn't necessarily need to be addressed here again, because again, most of it's going to become a public road. The rest of it is going to be a limited use by the for stormwater maintenance going forward. So, yeah.
I very much appreciate your answer. I was expecting you, Mr. Hearing Examiner, do not have the authority to address a private agreement between these private property owners, i.e. the road maintenance agreement, but I think everyone probably appreciates the discussion we just had. So I don't think anything further on that would be necessary, but thank you for.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Background. And then just one other point is that completely understand the concerns about catastrophic event and ensuring that HOA has appropriate coverage to address, you know, road washout, property damage. I was discussing on the break, like any property owner, the HOA actually is going to be obligated under state law as a common interest community to maintain property insurance for its common elements. This will be a part of the common elements. This is addressed in the staff report that there is a reserve, a study, and funds that are required to maintain that with that insurance requirement as well. In the event of a catastrophic event, it would be our expectation that would be a claim tendered to the insurance company that is the policy that is required, we would tender that to the insurance company at that point in time to make appropriate arrangements to cover any sort of damages should a catastrophic event occur.
So, sure. And I guess to that point, even regardless of who ends up owning which part of the road or how all that works, because there's, you know, infrastructure that the HOA is required to maintain down at the shoreline, close to the shoreline, if something happened to the road, even if it's not technically part of, you know, what the HOA is responsible for or not, like I said, I don't have or need that answer specifically, but the idea is that insurance would cover that because it's necessary, you know, necessary infrastructure to get down to the thing that needs to be maintained. Is that a sort of reasonable thought?
Exactly. The pipe will be part of the property that's owned and insured by the HOA. And as I was explaining, it's kind of like when you have something break on your own private residence, if it you cause damage to your neighbor's property, the insurance company is going to cover that claim because they're insuring the injury causing component. So same principles would apply here as well. So understand the concern, but that's what insurance is for and it's required. So I think with that, I think the rest of the questions are more or concerns are more appropriately addressed by Mark. And so I'll hand it over to him.
Great. Thank you so much. And Mr. Wilbach, thank you. You're already sworn in, so go right ahead.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hearing Examiner. A couple of comments that were made or questions were just about the amount of stormwater that was being discharged to the wetland. And we are mimicking the existing flows to that wetland, which is a forested amount of flow. And so that tide gate that was mentioned, that's the outlet of the wetland to the sound, should not be seeing any more stormwater flow than it's currently seeing. And the system is specifically designed to not increase the flows to the wetlands, but any additional flows go directly to the sound. And so so in that, we're kind of mimicking the existing conditions. There should not be an increased load on that wetland is the intent of the entire design.
Sure. And just to clarify that point for those that don't hear about this kind of thing, you know, every other day, in terms of what's happening there, you're essentially saying most of the property currently is in an undeveloped state. So it's not hard to envision that, you know, stormwater right now does what it does. It just makes its way gravity wise for the most part down the slope and to the sound. The idea is after the development occurs, even if it doesn't exactly do what it did before, the sort of flow path and quantity should be identical to what it was, or it certainly shouldn't exacerbate or create problems downslope. Is that sort of an accurate way to try to
exactly
around it? Okay.
Yep, that's exactly correct. So, and then I think one of the, just to expound more on the maintenance of the system, and so how this is going to work is that on title and as part of the plat, there will be a stormwater covenant recorded for the maintenance of the system that is to be maintained by the HOA. So the roads and the storm pond, the roads up on top that serve the 42 homes, those are all going to be public roads. And so the county is going to maintain the stormwater infrastructure associated with the public road for those 42 lots. And then they'll also, per one of the conditions, maintain the pond itself, et cetera. And it's just only the pipeline from the downstream of the pond out to the shoreline is the responsibility of HOA. And as part of the site development permit, the SDAP, we're required to provide an operations and maintenance manual. As part of that permitting that will outline what the maintenance responsibilities are, how often it needs to be inspected, all those details, right, will be outlined in the operations and maintenance manual. And so that will be on file with the county and also provided to the homeowners association. But getting back to this stormwater covenant that's going to be required, that's the way that that is outlined is it clearly states the responsibility of the homeowners association to maintain that system, but also allows, if necessary, for the county to come in and do maintenance and then charge the homeowners association for any costs associated with that. So there is a backstop built in to that stormwater covenant. That's a standard language, you know, across many projects. So it's been well established over time.
Okay. So if proper maintenance maybe hasn't occurred or slipped a little bit and there's a big event and it creates issues, the county, you know, someone calls the county and says, you know, there's a huge problem, all this water, the county can sort of use its, you know, police power and its power under that provision to go and fix it, whatever it costs, and then charge the HOA.
That's absolutely correct. Yep. Excellent. That's how the stormwater covenants work. Yep. Were there any other items on your list that you wanted me to cover at this time on as far as questions go?
I mean, I think I have a pretty good grasp of what is being proposed. Well, I thought I had a really good grasp when I started, and then I got confused. Now I think I'm back to understanding. So I think I have a good sense of it all. So I don't have any more very specific questions. If there were sort of, you know, there was a thought that maybe the proposed conditions or some issues there or the SEPA stuff. But I think at this point, if now would be the right time to have you discuss this or we go back to county staff, whatever would make the most sense. I don't know if county staff had some comments they wanted to provide in response to public testimony, but
I'll surrender the platform to the county staff right now. They'd like to go over through a few items, and then I can fill in any gaps from there.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
And just at the outset, did you have any specific sort of response to the public testimony before you get into the nitty gritty details?
Right. Yeah. I really appreciate the public comments, you know, that we've had thus far. There is one more public comment that we did receive via email that I did forward. I was from Ruth Ann Gustafson. She's a next door neighbor. And let me just real quickly just go over that.
Sure.
Because she did have some specific questions. And then I thought, you know, part of the record too, that we would make sure the applicant had this info too.
Sure. And I just for one real quick, I did receive it and I included it as exhibit 41. And that actually is that email, and then also Catherine Tarbell's, I think,
right,
one or two, yes, emails. But with that, go right ahead.
Right. Okay. Very good. The a couple of questions were brought up. She had in relation to the mitigation plan. She wanted a copy of that, and I'll make sure that does get forwarded to her. She says she's adjacent to the infiltration gallery. She asked, what are the proposed infiltration gallery property line setbacks? And then what is the cross-section view of the infiltration gallery design? So I think we do have that information and we can get that to her. And then she asked, are there going to be any gabion cages? Well, that definitely is not going to be the case. And then I'm concerned, she says, about hard armoring on the shoreline adjacent to her lot. Well, there is no armoring proposal with this application. And then finally, I think she asked about, as I understand, the infiltration gallery itself, the pipe that is the underground pipe requires a 5-foot setback from all property lines, from her property line adjacent. So that's a condition. And then the infiltration gallery itself I believe, requires a 10-foot setback from the south part. She's the south neighbor. So just for that to be addressed in the record. And then last, she has that the storm drainage plan calls for 2-inch diameter galvanized steel pin piles. And then obviously her concern is the galvanized metal, which is zinc typically. And then she's asking about zinc and leachate and impacts to aquatic organisms. And I'm not really sure how to really address that. I believe that zinc typically is incorporated into plant cells and things like that more so. But maybe we could have a discussion with the applicant rep on that. And I don't think there's anything we missed in relation to the public concerns that haven't just been talked about here too. So,
well, I guess piggybacking on that final thought, we did sort of miss the, I think it was Ms. Tarbell's comment about, I believe it was maybe hydrofluoric carbons or microplastics or maybe both, but perhaps the applicant, one of their experts, will have a thought.
Yeah. And then of course, the issue with tire wear and how that's that the treatment and as I understand, then there will be a pre-treatment system and facility that's installed. And so maybe Mark might be able to cover that.
Okay. Well, and
thank you.
Okay. Well, are we going to go back and forth?
Whatever your pleasure is.
Well, Mark could maybe answer that specific or provide any info. And then I think at that point, we'd probably be ready to sort of go through the clarifying SEPA that you wanted to do and the conditions. Yes. So if Mr. Bilwat can provide
that any sounds good. Thoughts. Great. Thank
okay.
you.
So stay nearby, I guess, is what I was going to say.
I will.
All right. Mr. Bilwat is back.
All right. So in answer to a couple of those questions, we are, as I testified earlier, providing enhanced water quality treatment. So that's kind of the highest level of treatment that's available as far as the best management practices. So that should mitigate any concerns with the water quality with stormwater. In addition to that, I believe there's it was a condition of SEPA, if I remember correctly, that the quality of the water being discharged to the Sound be tested annually. And so there is some provisions for that. So it's just not a install it and trust this is going to work. There is some follow-up testing that is required as a part of the project. And then, from there, additional things possibly could be done if we zero in on, anything of concern as part of that testing.
Okay. Great. Well, then at that point, if that concluded this portion, I guess, I don't know if the applicant wants to start or the county, I'm fine either way. I think it's all going to be related, but go ahead.
Yeah, if I may jump in, Mr. Examiner, there was kind of a question from the audience on who the testing goes to. And to clarify that would go to the county is where the testing would go to for their review. So. And then do you want to go through the SEPA items or
maybe not?
Okay.
Go through the condition clarification since you're up and that might be a good time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I can go through some of the conditions. Mr. Hearing Examiner, what I do have is I do have three copies of kind of my notes on the staff report just to make it easier, right? Rather than me just going through it all verbally. So I could enter this into the record if you don't mind, because I think that will make all this go a lot quicker potentially. And so I can turn that over.
Sure. So that would end up being exhibit 42, I think.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And this is staff report with Mark Vilak's annotations. Is that sort of
summary? That's a great, So on the top of it, I did put applicant's comments to staff report is what I kind of, I put a title on top of the document that states that. So just jumping in to go through some of these verbally, on page number 9 of the staff report, the second paragraph, like kind of third line from the bottom, references exhibit 34 in reference to the engineering plans. That should be exhibit 35 through 37.
Oh, right.
And I'm getting concurrence from the county on that.
Sorry, I'm scrolling up. Give me one moment. I apologize.
Yep, I understand. I wish you had my
30 pages doesn't scroll very quickly. Okay, here we go. All right, sorry, one more time. Page nine,
second paragraph, third line from the bottom of that paragraph, it references exhibit 34 in reference to engineering plans. And that should be reference exhibits 35 through 37.
Okay, so this isn't part of the conditions or even part of SEPA. This is just sort of making sure there's no confusion about the staff report.
Right. I have two items on just two or three items just on that. And then I can dive into the conditions. So.
Okay, that's fine.
And then now flipping over to page 14. And this is pretty minor. Pretty minor items here, but item number 4 on that page is kind of a table.
Yep, impact the wetland and shoreline.
Yeah. So it references Sound View Wetland Consulting prepared an updated wetland delineation. That isn't entirely correct. Ed Sewell did that work under Exhibit 11. So exhibit 11 would be the right exhibit to reference in regards to wetland delineations.
Okay, sorry. So, yeah, thank you. So the delineation happened with Sewell a little bit earlier, but then the critical areas report and habitat management plan was Soundview, correct?
Correct. Yeah, we utilized their expertise to put together a very robust mitigation plan.
Got it.
And then there, and this is in my notes too, the fourth line down, it references a stream, which there was not a stream within the area of inspection. So just wanted to clarify that for the record. Okay. And then down towards the bottom, where it's talking about the size of the temporary impacts. That number that's referenced is actually the temporary shoreline buffer impacts. In my notes, I did provide, all the different type of impact areas, right? So I probably don't need to go over those with you verbally since it is a matter of record. So we'll just continue to move on.
We'll end up using the reports themselves as opposed to the staff report when it comes to those specific details, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. All right. Now getting into the conditions, starting on page 25, condition number 3.
Sorry, one sec. And again, yep. For everyone in the room, I like to just make a distinction between proposed conditions, which are what are being proposed in relation to this permit, and which I, as the hearing examiner, have authority to, amend, tweak, add to, delete, et cetera, as long as I'm consistent with the law, versus what I would call mitigation requirements or mitigation measures under the MD&S that was issued. So to be clear, right now we're looking at the end. Is that right? We're looking at the proposed conditions?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay. Yep.
So this is condition number 3. So there's been, just for your history, Mr. Hearing Examiner, there's been a lot of back and forth a little bit with the county deciding how they wanted to handle the maintenance of the storm system. They were going to maintain it. They weren't. They were, you know, so there's a couple conditions here that are just conflicting with each other that I just would like to get cleaned up. And so this condition number three, the first sentence basically alludes to that the Public Works is going to be maintaining the stormwater system, which is not correct. And so I'd like that first sentence in condition number three struck, because there is a following condition, condition 13, that very clearly delineates who's responsible for what. So condition 13 is the condition that should remain that fully addresses stormwater maintenance.
Okay, so you're saying strike number three, but under the more specific condition in 13, it kind of clarifies that the county would be responsible for the sort of upland part and the HOA for the beach part.
Yep. And there is a the second sentence in number three does talk about bonding and operation and maintenance manuals and stuff like that, which that second part of condition three, we're okay with remaining. I just added in my notes that it talks about the first couple words of that sentence are the system. And my recommendation would be to add the stormwater system, just so we all knew what system we were talking about on number three.
Wait, okay, so don't strike three or only strike part of three? Is that what?
Yeah, the first sentence of three should be struck.
Okay.
And then there's a second sentence, you know, that can remain.
And out of curiosity, Mr. Billock, has the applicant team discussed any of this yet with the county in advance of this moment or not? I'm just curious.
I have Steve from the county nodding his head yes, that he's good with this change. So
what I was going to suggest was, ultimately I think it would probably be helpful for me and for a clear record if you could just do sort of an overview of what the changes will be, but in terms of the actual language, if the parties, you know, when we're done, if you all can send a sort of agreed whatever, and then I'll, you know, if I approve, you know, etc. I haven't made a decision for those that are watching, but I'm saying, you know, it would be helpful if you all have had some agreement so that I'm not messing up, you know, the details that you're trying to explain. Does that make sense? I'm not trying to be difficult. Yes. I apologize.
Absolutely. I have the county agreeing over here behind me to that. So they're in agreement. So
my suggestion is going to be exhibit 43. 42 yes. Is your annotations. 43 would be sort of agreed, proposed conditions.
Yeah, revised proposed conditions, right?
Right, but agreed, yeah. Between the applicant, right. and staff. And then SEPA I want to talk about separately, but so if you could just touch on what the changes are, just in case there are those watching that would be interested, but you don't have to get like...
Yep, I'll go through them quickly. Number six references the 1994 stormwater manual, which is the wrong manual that we're designing the project underneath. So I'm suggesting that sentence be struck because it's handled in condition number nine, more clearly states which manual to use. At the bottom of page 25, there's kind of a Scrivener's error where there's kind of a condition eight tacked on to the end of condition seven. And it's talking about traffic management, which is not really has anything to do with the shoreline portion of this project. There's not really a traffic component to the area with inside the shoreline. So we'll work with the county about removing that condition.
Essentially strike eight period and the sentence that comes right after.
Yeah, okay. Correct. So again, kind of floating through page 26, just reaffirming that condition nine is a correct condition as far as which manual we're using. Skipping down to condition number 11. This is, as I have testified previously, this is a very unique design in the infiltration facility that's at the shoreline. It's really not an infiltration facility met to meet flow control requirements, right? Because we're meeting the flow control requirements up on the highlands with the pond. And so this infiltrator gallery is more of a discharge technique underneath the innovative design part of the stormwater manual. And part of that has to do with just the fluctuation of groundwater. To give you some context of we can't always provide the full separation, you know, when it's a higher tide event. And since the water has already been fully water quality treated to enhanced level, we've already done the flow control mitigation. The county and myself are comfortable with it being more treated more as a discharge BMP than an actually flow control BMP. So we'll work together on language on number 11 to get that cleaned up.
And also to that extent, it's I think it will be helpful for posterity's sake, anytime these features are discussed, if it's more clear if something is up top versus down below, because you know you see infiltration. I think that's where I got confused earlier today, where I went, wait, there's a infiltration vault. And I thought the reference was to up top. And I thought the whole point was that shouldn't happen. And you clarified it, but does right. that make sense when you guys are, you know, trying to be as clear as to which facilities we're actually discussing? So.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Sure. Yep. And then number 13, this is reaffirming that this is condition number 13 clearly outlines the maintenance responsibilities. So this will be the remaining condition in regards to maintenance that kind of controls who's maintaining what. So that's where that's clearly defined.
Going back to 12, same issue in terms, Mr. Vilbach, if clarification on what that facility is. I'm saying I understand it right now, but in 5 years, 10, right? You know, if someone is unfamiliar, there could be confusion as to what the infiltration facilities references. Is it down on the beach or whatever is up there? I just think the tiny detail just to make sure there's no confusion would be good. That's all.
Absolutely. We Great. Can add that to our notes. And then skipping down on the next page, page 27 to item number 18. And 18 currently reads, shoreline construction activities shall be constructed in a manner such that private properties adjacent to the area are not impacted. It's our feeling that this is a little bit vague in nature of defining of what impacted is. And so our recommended language was shoreline construction activities shall be conducted in compliance with all applicable regulations and shall not encroach on private properties adjacent to the project area. And so again, this is in my notes and we'll work with the county on more clear language. And just if you indulge me, I mean, one example would be, let's say we're meeting the county noise ordinance for the work that we're doing, but someone feels that they're impacted by us making noise at, let's say, 10 o'clock in the morning, right? Where we're meeting the requirements, but they still feel that they're impacted, right? And so we want to kind of avoid that potential. And
do you happen to know off the top of your head, because I certainly don't, whether the sort of applicable regulations here would involve notice of some kind to adjacent or nearby property owners that work is occurring? Not necessarily that they get to object and stop it, but you know, I think as a being neighborly, it's always helpful to get a heads up that, you know, work is occurring. As someone that works from home, I have that issue sometimes where I'm like, oh, the person there is going to be doing work or there. And, you know, so it's just helpful to know is all I'm saying. If that's not part of the regs, I would suggest that would be helpful, but.
We'll discuss that with the county and they can answer that too. They may know their regulations off the sure. top of their head a little better than me.
No, that's fine. I just didn't know if you knew.
Yep. And then number 19, there's just some cleanup there because Soundview Consulting did not do the geotech report or the final alternatives analysis. So the geotech report was by Earth Solutions, and the report that should be referenced in conjunction with Soundview Consulting is the Shoreline and Fish and Wildlife Habitat Assessment and Habitat Management Plan. So again, this will be in my notes and in the revisions.
Sure. But you did the final alternatives analysis, right? Or LDC?
Yeah, LDC did. And it's, okay. Yep. More important, you know, what they were trying to get to is that the recommendations from the mitigation plan, right, by SoundView and the geotech report are followed. Like, who, you know, yes, we're following the alternatives report. That's given by the plans and everything we have in the record, right? It's more important that
there weren't a bunch of recommendations that went, here were the alternatives, this is the only one that really makes sense, period, yeah. Versus the habitat management plan says, you know, you should do all these things to ensure that, you know, there's no net loss, et cetera. We don't need to get into all the detail, but certainly understand the idea.
Yep. And then lastly, just on corrections or just suggestions is proposed condition 22. It's talking about traffic control devices and what they're what the county is trying to get at is the temporary construction traffic control devices. So we're not responsible for putting in new road signs and other permanent things, you know, on that private road as part of our stormwater pipe, right? But we are responsible to ensuring that we have it, you know, signed properly while construction work is happening. And so just a comment on that. And then I believe one other thing I just wanted to mention, just to get in the record, is condition number 17, which talks about the HPA permit. Just for the record, we are working very closely with Fish and Wildlife and are very close to obtaining our HPA permit. We've had many meetings with them on site. You know, DOE has also been on site numerous times and looked at things and have commented on the permit. So just to give kind of the hearing examiner, you know, just the understanding that this has been looked at. There's even the tribes have been on site, you know, and done site visits and commented on the project. And so it's been very well noticed and, you know, we've brought in all the appropriate parties. So just to give, you know, sure. Just wanted to mention that.
I had that on my list to ask Attorney Lau, but that's fine. So essentially the HPA permit, you know, which is the permit that WDFW would be issuing, correct?
That is correct.
Yep. On your the applicant is on their way to obtaining that, and that permit in particular kind of focuses on impacts to, you know, the shoreline and fish and the habitat, as it were. Wait, am I mixing up my permits? I apologize.
There is an element of that. It's basically what they're most concerned about as far as actual infrastructure is the emergency bubble up facility. And so they did have several comments and we even made some design changes based on their comments and where it was located, et cetera. And they're also concerned, you know, just they've looked at, you know, water quality and other things. And, you know, just honestly, as part of the life of the project, it was underneath DOE's recommendations that we do provide some of that flow splitter to the wetland, right, you know, et cetera, is based on their direct recommendations that we added that feature into the project. So I just want to thank them for that.
And to piggyback, my understanding from the record is that no Section 10 permit from the Army Corps is required. Is that right?
That is correct.
And no, as far as we know, no 404 or, well,
there's no.
Well, I was just thinking about the wetland. Now there might be work, but, you know, sorry, go ahead.
Oh yeah, from our based on all our conversations with the different agencies, that they're not requiring a Corps permit.
Okay, so no Corps permit. So the only other sort of jurisdictional permit that you're aware of would be that HPA.
That is correct.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for clarifying that. And I think I think that was it that I had specifically for you. Unless you had anything further.
I think that concludes it for the applicant at this time. So I'll turn it back over to the county.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Bullock.
Thank you.
Always the excitement of who will pop into the screen for me. Mr. Heacock. Thank you, Mr. Heacock.
Absolutely.
The process I described essentially, if the county has sort of thought through and reviewed the proposed changes to those conditions.
Yes.
sorry, the proposed changes to the conditions that have been proposed by staff.
Yes.
It would be helpful for me to get, you know, kind of that revised version. I don't think we need to.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think in relation to traffic, in fact, that particular, and I don't really think the numbering is going to change as well, you know, in relation to the number of conditions. Really, we can omit that related number subset 8.
Sure.
That's referenced, right? Because we do have a traffic.
Sorry, Mr. I'm saying if you concur, I think we just went through it ad nauseum. And if the county concurs with the proposed changes, I don't think we need to redo what we just did, you know, but it would be helpful in terms of ensuring that, you know, I see what is being proposed. Now, let me be clear, you know, I haven't decided anything.
Yes.
As the hearing examiner, I would have the authority to amend, alter, tweak those conditions.
Yes.
Versus the other thing I thought you were going to talk about, which is the SEPA mitigation measures.
Right.
Up until just 6 months ago, I was of the opinion I, as the hearing examiner, could do nothing in relation to those. There was a recent case that came out very recently that implies that it's potentially possible for the hearing examiner to make minor revisions to clarify things.
Right.
I haven't seen that case yet. I wish I remembered the name of it off the top of my head, but what was your hope in terms of the SEPA mitigation measures?
Well, I think the SEPA mitigation measures, you know, are not really going to be altered.
Okay.
You know, we did discuss, obviously, you know, and I'll tell you what we typically do in relation to creating the conditions is really we look to SEPA first. So whatever those conditions are, in the original SEPA decision, we do incorporate them by reference and typically then put them as a component of the planning and zoning conditions, because those are elements, obviously, of planning and zoning. In relation to planning and zoning and SEPA, and then with the idea of neighboring impacts in for that one condition that Mark just went over. And I think, you know, our noise ordinance and our noise ordinance in relation to time of construction, those will typically be dealt with in the site associated site development activity permit. And so when they revise, when the applicant revises that site development activity permit, those are typically conditions, standard conditions, for issues with access, notifying neighbors if roadways are going to be disrupted and things like that. Sure. And so these are all temporary impacts. And I think we have a really good way to notify this neighborhood when the roadway may be impacted by, you know, the pipe, the insulation of the pipe and things like that. So I suggest that we would create a slight revision to condition, what is it? Condition number 22, which says traffic and roads. And I think that that Mark had hit that quite well in relation to his comment relating to temporary construction. And I think we just add a little note to the back in relation to the notifying the lower HOA neighbors. I think of this as we do have two we have two homeowners associations really involved with this project. And
I think you touched on the point I was trying to make, to the extent that, you know, whether I were to approve this and add conditions or use the conditions, the applicant needs to follow the regulations, the law, period. Whether I say you need to follow the law, that's just part of it. Whether that's under SEPA or under, you know, the permit decision. But the sort of clarifying point I was hoping to have made was, and I just don't know the answer off the top of my head, was the
notification.
But it sounds like the county, you know, and the applicant really doesn't have an issue with let the neighbors know when these things are going to happen.
Oh, completely.
There you go. Okay.
Thank you. Excellent. I don't have anything further at this point. Really appreciate your comment and concern, and also the way that you incorporated the public comments here as well. I think that worked quite well, and we'll follow through with all of that information that the public has also asked for.
Sure. So just before, and I was hoping to hear from Attorney Lau one final time, but before I let you go, just to be clear on exhibits, I have 1 through 40 were clearly identified, with 40 or 39 being your PowerPoint, 40 being the sign-in today at the chambers. 41 would be the Gustafson and Tarbell emails that came in just in the last few days. 42 would be the staff report with Mark Vilbach's annotations. 43 would be the proposed conditions agreed upon between staff and the applicant. And then finally, I would say 44 should be the chat. There is some substantive aspects of the chat here on the virtual side. I think it's worth having in the record. Not that much. I'm just saying there's just a few comments I think it'd be helpful to have, and for purposes of PRA, that needs to be saved anyway.
Hopefully we can capture that. I think Ms.
Walston, Amanda knows. Yeah, Amanda is the best. She knows what she's doing.
Very good.
Not issue there.
She's the guru.
There you go. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If I could, I just wanted to check early on in Steve's testimony, you referenced submitting maybe the map view or the Department of Ecology.
Oh yeah, sure.
Property shoreline photo. Do you want to, that going to be an exhibit also?
We can just incorporate that in the PowerPoint, revise the PowerPoint.
Do a revised PowerPoint.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect.
I typically do like to look at the ortho as a record in every shoreline permit, every shoreline property throughout the entire state has the shoreline orthos, and it's just beneficial. It's just a minor insert in the PowerPoint that we'll provide. Yeah,
that's great.
Perfect. Very good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I just wanted to ask a question or two of Attorney Lau here at the end. Thank you so much. Essentially, I just want to make clear that the vesting thing isn't what I am struggling with. It's the permit expiration thing. Okay. And if it's the county and the applicant's position that is far beyond the scope of what I should address, fine. That said, I think you had sort of, we won't call it testimony, obviously, you had pointed out that there have been several sort of milestones or permits that have been granted. And, you know, some of that I knew, so a lot of it I didn't. All I wanted to propose to you is, A, do you want to make any final argument or final comment as the applicant? And as what you well know, it's the applicant's burden, not the county, not Mr. Heacock. It's the applicant's job to convince me one way or the other. But B, I just wanted to be clear, it's the vesting thing is not what has tripped me up. It's more the, you know, do permits expire? Why don't they, et cetera? And that's fine. If it's well beyond the scope, you know, it's fine. But I struggled with it to the extent that this project is so clearly intertwined with the other project. I'm not trying to be difficult. I know I'm difficult. I'm sure your colleagues at Van S. Feldman can point that out. But so I wanted to give you an opportunity for any final thoughts or comments. And also, if you wanted to submit any kind of little argument, or I know I put you on the spot today to the extent that you did great. I'm not saying, you know, you were flustered. I know it wasn't anything you had thought about. So those are the final thoughts. I just wanted to give you a moment.
Sure. No. And to be perfectly honest, my partner retired before this project finished. So that's part of the reason why I'm not as up to speed on the history of the approvals. It's my understanding, though, that and just quick look at the code. I mean, Kitsap County provides mechanisms for extending plat approval. So there's the phasing requirements. I agree. There's that 3-year period. It also provides for the applicant to be able to apply for extensions even with it beyond those 3-year periods. And it's my understanding that between the prosecuting attorney and folks in our office, that has been documented. And I mean, that's why we're here today. And that's why the county was willing to continue to entertain the minor modification, which was approved by them a couple of weeks ago, or a week ago, because of that. So
to be clear, I didn't, again, I wasn't just trying to poke holes in anything.
Yeah.
I saw the phrase 27-year-old vested or whatever. And I right. kind of, I went, oh man. And then if there was a memo or any kind of legal memo that was produced, I never saw it. So
fair enough.
Yeah. Being, I was sort of in the dark in some respects. And I can understand how an applicant and probably the county, would be frustrated with, me going off the rails like this. But I think you can understand as an attorney that why I see that. And I kind of go,
Yeah, no, understood. Yeah, no, I've worked on an amazing number of plats that were approved when I was in high school and are still alive. So I know it's convoluted, and different jurisdictions have different means to string those out. That's our position, is that the county staff has documented that. I don't have it in front of me today for the record, but if you'll indulge me, I will stick with it's beyond the scope of this record. If we show up here on appeal of the minor mod, then you get to poke at me at that, if that's an issue.
No, that's fine. So,
how about that?
I appreciate that, to the extent that, again, well, yeah. And also I kind of thought that would be, until I got to the very end of 1200 pages, I thought I was actually reviewing two things. And then I saw the decision that came out, which is actually, wow, I'm glad I thought of that, because that decision, theoretically, were it to be appealed, would come to me. Do you see any reason to leave this record open, or because this record technically is going to be open anyway for an additional week or whatnot, in terms of how
because we've got to get some clarity on the conditions and the appeal period. It closes on Monday, is that correct? Yeah, it closes on Monday. So practically speaking, I would imagine our record's still going to be open on Monday. So I need to talk to my client, but at least practically speaking, I think both will be open. And then I could understand why, if this the minor mod was appealed, depending on the scope of the issues, it may be appropriate to keep the record open. To some extent, though, I mean, we may come back to say, just like any other consolidated hearing, even if we had come to you all together with an open record appeal and an open record permit issuance, there'd be different criteria relative to the shoreline permit that is not related to the minor modification. And at least, I mean, in terms of your thinking, we think that you should be focused on just the issues with respect that we've been addressing here today substantively on the shoreline compliance component. So
I think I get it. So essentially, don't leave it open is what you're saying. Or do, I just want to be clear.
Oh, I think it still will be, I guess, the practical matter. We need to submit a few more things to you, and that appeal period will close on Monday. So, yeah.
Got it. Okay, same page then. Thank you for clarifying that. I just wanted to be clear. And then finally, you didn't want or feel the need to produce anything more. You're good, et cetera.
We feel very comfortable that you have everything you need, besides the clarified conditions and the staff PowerPoint that you would need to make to determine that the permit application under the Shoreline Master Program should be issued. Because I think that's the decision that's before you here today. Again, if somebody appeals the minor mod, we'll come back and give you more information in the record for you to deal with that issue. How about that?
Okay, then thank you very much.
I
really appreciate it. And just to be clear, if Mr. Heacock's there, I want to make sure staff didn't have anything final.
No.
Nothing for staff, he says.
Okay, so with that, if I can have Amanda Walson show back up, I always do this to her at the end. We're about to close the record. I truly appreciate members of the public that have watched the entire time and are interested. But when I produce my decision after the record finally closes, finally next week, folks that are interested, how would they end up being able to see that or get a copy, Ms. Walston?
So for anyone that has already signed up as an interested party, they will receive a copy of the decision. I have contact information for the individuals that testified in person here. And I have, if anybody else wants to be added as an interested party, they can email and request that. And we can include them in the decision also. And they can email me at awalston@kitsap.gov. So, or they can call the main county line and ask to be added that way if they prefer to call by phone.
Excellent. And then that the final thing, just that chat function or what that you're kind of in charge of our Zoom, I mm-hmm. requested that become an additional exhibit. I just wanted to make sure I pointed that out because I don't truly know how that part of it works. I don't want it to get lost. But so I think you know that. But I think with that, we can go ahead and end our hearing today. A lot to think about. I certainly have not made up my mind a whole lot to sort through, but I will review everything again, especially in light of the testimony I heard today from the public, from the experts, from the applicant, from county staff, et cetera, and produce a decision after the record closes in a couple weeks. So thank you, everybody. We'll end today's hearing. Wish everybody safety and good health. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.